It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It's been a year since our last visit with Pittsburgh Bishop David Zubik. And in that time, we've marked the one-year anniversary of Pope Francis. Bishop Zubik is back to talk with us about issues pertaining to the church, specifically in Pittsburgh. But first, when the white smoke first appeared at the Vatican and Cardinal Jorge Mario Bergoglio announced that he would adopt the name Francis, we talked with some of the sisters of St. Francis of the Providence of God in Whitehall about their reaction to the chosen name.
I was at the reception desk answering the phone, and Sister Teresa called me. She said, "Sister Michelle, there's the white smoke. You know, there's white smoke from the chimney. Put the TV on."
St. Francis considered everything as sacred.
He had great respect, even for the little animals, you know, and little bugs and that. He never stepped on them.
When we got news that he took the name of Francis, most of us already knew the line of thought that he would have, what kind of a pope this pope would be. He would be simple, he would give a lot of value to poverty, and he would try to reform many things with the Holy See.
Now, a year later, we've followed up with some of the sisters of St. Francis. Sister Margaret Peg Markey and Sister Nancy Langhart told us how they feel about the last year under Pope Francis. They've shared their hopes and their concerns about the pope's leadership and the future of the Catholic Church in modern society.
He's just a real pastoral, naturally happy guy. I mean, you see all these pictures of him, you know, with little kids. He loves to have little kids around. And so that's his natural style. So he's chosen some things to do based on that's the kind of person that he is. One of which is to live not in the regular Vatican places where the popes normally lived, the Vatican apartment, I think it was, but he lives in a common Vatican guest house where there's a lot of other people. And he said, this is a quote, my psychiatric need. So he needs to be around people. He's not a hermit type.
When you work with students, you begin to be sad because so many of them don't have much to do with the church anymore. Not that they're not interested in God or spirituality, or they'll go on retreats with you, but they're not going to church so much.
I really am hoping for a big reform. I'm like Nancy. I have a lot of good feeling about Pope Francis. I had good feelings about the other popes too, but he's just such a more natural kind of person. And his call for us to live according to the name that he chose, Francis. You know, as Franciscans, we are trying to really live a simple life, and that's not easy in our age. It's really hard not to be a conspicuous consumer, which we all are, and to try to live simply. So I hope that our church can do that. I hope that our church can be much more accepting of gays and homosexuals. I hope that our church can accept people who are divorced and remarried. I hope that our church can accept and understand homosexuality.
I've been really impressed by his simplicity. I was really glad to see so much of the robes and the pomp and circumstance be taken away. And I also realize that he's only been in office 1 year. And so you can't really expect somebody to come in and change the world in 1 year. So I'm trying to be patient, but I think that a few of the things that he has said make me wonder. For instance, his saying something about theology of women, and I'm wondering if there's a theology for men. Not sure what the difference would be. He also has made a statement that he thinks that the sexual problem with the priests has basically been taken care of, and that worries me. So I'm hopeful, but ask me next year.
And those are the comments of some of the sisters of St. Francis talking about the first year of Pope Francis's papacy. I'm joined now in Studio A by the Bishop of Pittsburgh, David Zubik. Bishop Zubik, thanks so much for joining us today. Good to have you back.
Paul, it's good to be with you and with all of your listeners. So thanks, and I certainly want to wish a blessed Passover to our Jewish sisters and brothers, and a most blessed Holy Week to all Christians as we get ready for the high point of this week with Holy Thursday, Good Friday, and certainly Easter.
Let's start by addressing what we just heard. One of the sisters that we interviewed made the comment that she is hoping for major reform, big changes, more acceptance of members of the LGBTQ community, and a rethink of the issue of divorce and remarrying. What do you think about what she is saying here?
Well, I think, first of all, there has been a major sea change, I think, in terms of the way that people see the Pope. When Pope Francis came out on the balcony on March 13th of last year and took the name of Francis and did so with this simple white cassock, people began to see that there was a change. And I think over the course of the entire year, any time the Pope has addressed people in public, he's called us all to take a look at the fact that there really is only one judge who is God. And that I think we have to all be able to look at each other as brothers and sisters and see each other the way that God has, in fact, created us in his image and in his likeness. And I think that, we live in a society that's quick to judgment, on lots of different fronts. We don't think twice about making judgments about other people, who they are personally. And I think that's one of the things that he's really touched base on. Now, I think that one of the things we really have to see about the Pope is that I think there's a lot of misunderstanding that would lead people to think that he's made some major changes about what the church really believes in. And that really hasn't happened. And I don't think that that's going to happen either down the road. I think what he's basically done is because of his own demeanor as a pastor. He speaks a language that we all can understand. I like to say that when we take a look at soon-to-be Saint Pope John Paul II, he was a philosopher. And so everything that John Paul II wrote and how he spoke was as a philosopher. Pope Benedict was a theologian, and everything that he wrote and said was spoken as a theologian. And Pope Francis is a pastor. And so he says things the way that people can easily understand. He speaks the language of the people. And I think, for example, one of the most powerful examples that I've thought about over this season of Lent is, one of the first things the Pope said, we have to be a poor church and we have to be a church for the poor. And in one of his homilies, because I get his homilies that he preaches every day, he said, we have to really make sure that we're reaching out to the poor. And he said, let me give you an example. If you go on the street and you see somebody who is sitting on the side with a baseball cap and that they need a handout, do you give them a handout and walk away? Or do you look into their eyes and do you connect with them heart to heart? And I think those are the kind of examples that, for example, when I'm walking on Fifth Avenue in Pittsburgh, always want to give something to people who are in need, I haven't always looked into their eyes, and I think the Pope calls us to be able to have that kind of respect for every single person, whoever they are. And I think that that's the sea change that the Pope has really tried to call forth in all of us. It's not anything new. It's the style in which he teaches, but it really demands and challenges that we take an honest to God look at how we relate to each other and how we see each other.
And he has not only talked the talk, but he certainly walks the walk. He has set this example for living a simple life. So is big reform, when we hear that mentioned, when we hear what the sisters are saying here, is big reform simply following the Pope's example of living a simple life, or is big reform doing things like recognizing gay marriage, for example?
Well, I think, first of all, the issue is the manner of relating. And what the Pope will say in every one of the talks that he gives, he speaks about two things. He speaks about that we're all sinners, and he first of all includes himself. But then second of all, he speaks about the profound gift of God's mercy. That God is continually merciful. And really, that's not the Pope's agenda. That's Jesus' agenda. Pick up the gospel and take a look at the stories that are there. Jesus always acted out of compassion for other people, and that sometimes we forget that. And I think that's what the Pope's calling for. I think that that when the Pope calls for respect, he's calling for respect about all people, people of all races, of all sexual persuasions, of taking a look at people of all economic stratus. And I think that's an important consideration that we have to come to have a good understanding of that, because unfortunately, prejudice still exists in our hearts, not only in society, but exists in our hearts. Every single person, if you take a look at where you are, somebody's going to be able to identify some sort of a resentment about somebody else or some sort of a prejudice. And I think the Pope's preaching and his example says, if you're going to be serious about Jesus, you can't be comfortable with this prejudices. Now, relative to the issue you said about gay marriage, I think that the Pope has been very clear that we all have to be respectful of each other, especially around the area of sexual orientation.
Well, and for example, is he treading new ground, this Pope, when he, for example, he's taken another step toward certainly making the Catholic Church more inclusive by telling priests to, for example, rethink how they reach out to the children of gay and separated parents. So is there something to be read into this particular statement? I mean, how do you, as the leader of the Pittsburgh Diocese, reinforce that message with your priests?
It's the same thing, that we have to be able to reach out to other people with compassion. The point that I was going to make was the Pope has already indicated he's not advocating for gay marriages because in terms of our own belief, the definition of marriage is between one man and one woman. And that it's for the deep love for each other and also for the procreation of children. So he's already on record as saying he's not advocating that there would be a change, nor could the church support that. But what he's saying is that that we still have to have a sense of respect for the differences that exist within us. And I think he makes the same statement, you know, around people who aren't married. And maybe with people who are living together or choosing not to be married but still living as if they are married, he's making the point that there's an absolute essential sacred commitment that comes about in marriage, and that the sexual relationships are really meant to be something that are held sacred within the context of a married life. But I think that the issue that the Pope goes on, that we can't make judgments about other people around any aspect, whether it's their sexual orientation or it's the color of their skin or it's their economic status in society.
If you have a comment or a question for our guest, Bishop David Zubik, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm. And on Twitter at ESSPGH, follow the conversation at #EPLive. What reforms, if any, would you like to see in the Catholic Church? 412-246-2002. Let's go first to Millie in Monongahela. Millie, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. You're on with Bishop David Zubik.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi, Millie. How are you today?
Good. How are you, Bishop Zubik?
I'm doing okay. Thank you very much.
Good. My question to you is, why have you chosen to go to war against the parishioners of your own flock to close such a vibrant and active church like the one in Monongahela?
Well, first of all, I hope I never engage in any kind of war. And are you from Monongahela, Millie?
Yes, I'm originally from, I used to live in the state of Georgia, and I moved 7 months ago to Monongahela.
Well, thank you very much. I think, Millie, if you've been a part of the decision that I made in Monongahela, and I simply want to, affirm the fact that for the last 7 years, there's been a very active discussion about how the church is reorganized in the Mid-Mon Valley, and Monongahela is one of those. We've worked very, very hard. I've worked very hard with an awful lot of people, including people who disagree with my position, that what we have to be able to do is take a look at what it really means to be church. And if you had a chance to read my 7-page letter that I sent to all of the parishioners, you'll note that I took very careful and direct steps at trying to help people to understand that. You may or may not be aware of the fact that I grew up in a town very much like Monongahela in Ambridge. And when I was growing up as a child, there were 7 Catholic churches and there were 7 steel mills. And because of the changes that take place in what we can effectively call the river towns, because there's been a drastic moving away of an awful lot of people, serious decisions have had to be made, and Monongahela is one of them. And I think that the concern that I've had, and I've voiced it, as a matter of fact, last September, September 23rd, I came to Monongahela, and I challenged people because the language people were using against each other, even in their own families, and the kind of letters that I was receiving from people were an embarrassment to a follower of Jesus Christ. Accusations, mean-spirited words, and I came to the parish and said, you know, it isn't a question at this particular point about whether, you know, what buildings should remain open, but whether or not there's a church here. And if you well remember, I gave people, everyone in the parish, an opportunity to write to me and to answer two questions. First of all, did they want to have a parish in Monongahela? And second of all, what would they do to support it? And I think I received over 400 letters from people. And I think the underlying element of it was that people understood what, in fact, is the church. It isn't a building. It is, in fact, what we are as a faith community. And I was very careful to be able to outline all of that. I came to the parish a few weeks ago just to make my announcement because it's important to see the church not as something that's dying or not even something that's brick and mortar, but it's something that can be lived in people's hearts. And almost everybody who wrote to me and over this 400 letters convinced me that they knew what the church was and that they knew that the church was more than a building. I well understand that there are a small group of people who disagree with my decision. They're contesting it, and that's their right. But I still want to continue to say the message, I'm not out against anybody. You know, that would be a lie against who I am as bishop. And everything that I need to be able to do is to encourage people that we can be church, that we can work together, and that goes far beyond what four walls of a building are.
412-246-2002, the number to call. Millie, thank you for your call and your comments. Let's go to Grant in Bethel Park. Grant, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for taking my call, and I'm a catechumen at St. Peter on the North Side.
Well, congratulations. This is going to be a big weekend for you and for all of us, huh?
Yes, sir.
You'll be coming into the church, so that'll be great.
Yes, thank you. Yes, sir. Bishop, I had a question on whether you would think, whether you would feel that Pope Francis is very influenced or by Saint Alphonse de Liguori, his moral theology, because I feel that Francis seems to speak right to the heart of to all of us, as opposed to a lofty thinker like Pope Benedict or Pope John Paul II.
Well, I need to respond and to say I don't know, Grant, that how much influence Alphonsus Liguori would have had on Pope Francis. I know Alphonsus Liguori's feast is on August the 1st, but what I do know is that, St. Ignatius of Loyola had a very deep influence on Pope Francis's life. He's still a Jesuit, and I think that when you take a look at Ignatius of Loyola, certainly the whole notion of what Ignatius taught was to go back and to really let the gospel speak to your own heart and to try to live the mission of Jesus Christ. And so I think everything that that Pope Francis does has that influence in his life. And when you hear him preach and when you see what he writes, he clearly is embracing the gospel in his own life and is asking us to take a look at the Bible, not simply as a book to pick up every so often, but to see it as really the roadmap of each of our lives. So that part, I think, is the strength of the spirituality of the man that we know to be our Pope today.
Grant, thank you for that call and that question. Let's go to Cheryl. Cheryl in Cranberry. Cheryl, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. You're on with Bishop Zubik.
Hello, Dr. Bishop Zubik. Excuse me.
Hi, Cheryl. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Good, thanks.
Can you tell me a little bit about the growth in Cranberry Township and St. Kilian Parish School?
Well, I think, first of all, if statistics are true that have been handed on to me, the Cranberry Adams Township, Mars area is the fastest growing area in the whole Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And I have to say that if there's a microcosm of that, it's St. Killian Parish. You know, think about the fact that 20 years ago it was a little country parish, you know, nestled in the small community of Morris. Today, now it's on Route 228. You know, the median age of the parish, I think, is somewhere in the mid-30s. St. Killian Parish is so alive, first of all, because you have an outstanding pastor and a great parochial vicar who are there. But the fact that that was the first brand-new elementary school that was constructed in the Diocese of Pittsburgh in 44 years. That school opened back in 2008. And it's one of the reasons why we've made the exciting decision to, right across the street, build the brand-new Cardinal Ward North Catholic High School, simply because the growth of people who are there, the youthfulness, and I'm not talking just in even in terms of chronological age, but I think the youthfulness of all the people in that particular area of the diocese speaks to some very exciting growth. And so if you're from that area, you know what I'm talking about. It truly is the church alive.
Cheryl?
My daughters go to that school, and we absolutely love the school, but we've seen it grow over the past 5 years that we've been there.
Well, there's a waiting list to get in there, you know, and so we're hoping for the same thing is going to be happening with the new high school as well.
Yes, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Cheryl, thank you for the call, and we need to get to a break. We are talking with the Bishop of Pittsburgh, David Zubik, who is with us here in Studio A and can take your comments and questions at 412-246-2002. We're looking at issues facing the Catholic Church in America and here in Pittsburgh, the Catholic Church that Bishop Zubik oversees. We'll continue with the Bishop on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are talking about issues facing the Catholic Church as we are just past the first anniversary of Pope Francis taking over the beginning of his papacy. And our guest is Pittsburgh Bishop David Zubik. If you have a comment or a question for Bishop Zubik, you can join us by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002, our email address, esspgh@wesa.fm, and on Twitter at esspgh, follow the conversation at #EPLive. What reforms, if any, would you like to see in the Catholic Church? What are the issues that you would like to talk about? 412-246-2002, the number to call. And let's go to Robin in Cranberry. Robin, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. You are on with Bishop Zubik.
Hi. Hope you guys are having a good day.
Hi, Robin. Hope you are too.
I'm curious to know, Bishop Zubik, how you would advise a person like myself. I have two young children, and I heard what you said about the Pope encouraging people to be more charitable, look people in the eye, especially someone who's asking and is obviously in need. But I don't know that I feel safe in any situation to indiscriminately go up to someone on the street, even if I really want to teach my children about being giving and generous and not being judging.
Well, I think I think obviously every parent has to define the parameters that you know you're going to feel safe with. I think the point of the Pope's challenge is that we treat each other as persons, not as objects, or that we don't see anybody that we can just walk by and disregard them. If I could relate a beautiful story to you, last night I had the privilege of being at a Passover meal of a good rabbi friend of mine, Rabbi Bizna, who's head of the Road of Shalom congregation. And they had invited maybe about a dozen friends that were there, and they have two boys. As a matter of fact, if you check the front cover of the Post-Gazette yesterday morning, you'll see two of them who are repeating those four important questions of the Jewish Passover. They were making these little wristbands that the kids are into making, and they came over and gave me one, and I gave them some money. And, you know, just as an exchange to say, I appreciated how you made this. And so then they went, they said, well, our mommy said that we can't accept any money for this. And I said, well, like, maybe it would be nice if you could take that money and see if you could use it for, you know, for some benefit. So they went to their dad and said, you know, what should we do? And they came back and they said, well, we're going to put this in. And I forget what the Jewish people call it, but it's a little depository for putting money that's going to be used for the poor. Right. And they said, he said, I want you to see we're putting this money that you gave us into this box so we can help people who are poor. I think that it's those kinds of experiences that parents can teach their children about, you know, reaching out to people who are in need or not ever treating somebody like they're an object. Think for a moment about the tragedy last week in the high school. You know, and how many of those instances, you know, we're hearing about since Columbine all the way through until last week. You know, part of that behavior, there's lots, it's a complex issue, but part of it is that we've gotten so used to not treating people as persons that somehow now violence becomes, you know, almost a daily experience in terms of threats. And I think parents can teach well how, in whatever way you see appropriate, to respect every single person for who they are, whether it's looking in somebody's eyes or contributing in a piggy bank that's going to be used for people who are poor or writing notes to somebody, you know, and especially when parents see that children might have a tendency to bully, that parents can teach their kids that that is not right, and that that really goes against God's love to be able to bully somebody. So I think the whole issue that we're dealing with here is that we have to treat each other in a relational aspect to see the sacredness of each person. And parents have that wonderful opportunity to be able to make those impressions on their daughters and sons.
Robin, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. And happy Easter to you. I think Robin has moved on. One of the things she mentioned is that she has two young children. The nuns that are the sisters that we heard earlier are saying that students and young people aren't going to church. What needs to be done to bring young people back to the church in greater numbers?
I'm glad you asked that question, you know, because the reality is that one of the things that Pope Francis is doing is help people to understand faith in a day-to-day experience. I think sometimes people think, you know, religious affiliation is nothing more than a book of rules, or that, you know, that there's something about, you know, organized religion that that causes people to be stiff and not human. In reality, the Pope is showing us the opposite is true. And I'm going to put a little plug in. I have this weekend, I'm releasing a pastoral letter. It's going to be my fourth. And it's called The Church Evangelizing. And what it's trying to do, I've tried to write it in ways that everybody can understand, because that's the only way that I can understand how to write. And I've basically said, you know, our job as followers of Jesus is to make friends for Jesus, you know, to help people understand who Jesus is. And the whole letter is around the whole notion of our faith commitment is a friendship. It's a friendship with Jesus, and it's meant to make friends for Jesus with others. And I go through the entire letter, making some concrete suggestions about very simple things that we can do in our day-to-day life that can not only be virtuous, but can show the connection to the Lord. And I think that part of the reason why I think an awful lot of people, but some young people aren't connected to the Lord is because they haven't been invited to come close to Him, either by their parents or by those of us in the church. And I have to say honestly, too, that while I respect Sister's comments, I can tell you that I see an energy in the late teens and the 20s that defies that kind of tag to be given to say, well, they've somehow disconnected from Jesus. You know, part of the excitement that I see in the work that I'm trying to do is to help people to come to know Jesus so that they can be an important part of letting the world know who He is as well, too. So I think we have to keep on looking at ways to make the gospel, to make who we are as a church be not only much more understandable to young people, but exciting as well. Not just simply for young people, but I think for people in perhaps in your generation and my generation. You know, I think the generations of the baby boomers and their children, I think in some ways they've drifted off from church perhaps even more so than the younger folks. But we have to continue to work to bring everybody into the fold.
412-246-2002, if you'd like to join the conversation with Bishop David Zubik. Let's go to Ron on the turnpike because he may be too far along in a few minutes.
Hello.
To join the conversation. Hi, Ron. How are you?
I'm good. It's Rod.
Oh, Rod. I beg your pardon.
Okay, Rod. Nice for you to join us.
And you, well, I disagree with what I'm hearing about the bishop. I don't think he's doing a good job.
About the bishop, hang on a second, Rod. The bishop is sitting with us. So are you referring to the bishop or the pope?
The bishop.
Okay.
All right. Well,
you
don't need to speak about him in the third person. He's right here.
Okay. Well, I don't believe that you are doing a good job. I think what you're doing is maintaining the status quo. The church has some very serious problems. And these problems have to be solved by the bishops working along with the papacy in Rome. I think it's absolutely essential that women be permitted to serve as priests, and further, that priests be permitted to marry. This would solve a lot of problems in the Catholic Church. It's very difficult to maintain in the modern world an antiquated system that's just falling apart. So I'd like to hear your comments, Bishop.
Well, thanks, Rod, for your honesty. Obviously, those two examples, they aren't changes that I can make. You know, those are changes that can come from the Pope himself. I think that both Pope Benedict and Pope John Paul II before him, and now Pope Francis, indicate the rationale of the strong tradition of the Catholic Church in those areas, and I think. There are lots of things when the Pope speaks about, and he did, and I think if you heard the opening comments by the sisters that Paul was able to include at the beginning of this broadcast, they said, well, the Pope has spoken about an increased role of women in the church, and I think he's serious about that. And I'm serious about it, too. We've included, the role of women more actively involved in the church.
Let me jump in, Bishop. How do you broaden opportunities for women in the Catholic Church if they do not include the priesthood?
It doesn't have to. I mean, what does that say about all men who aren't priests, too? I mean, you can't discount to say that somehow only the priests matter in a church. I think that lay leaders bring a great deal to what the work of the church.
So, but some might say that for women in the Catholic Church, there's this glass ceiling that you can only go so far. So if not making women priests, then what do you do to enlarge their role or to create, for example, to address the concerns of Rod, who just called in and said that he doesn't think that women have a big enough role in the church?
And I think it's a matter of trying to expand those roles. I think I'd have to say that half of my advisors are the people who are my senior staff are women. And I think their love and their dedication to the church, as most of the people on my senior staff are lay people, so it's both men and women, married men, single women, single men, but they bring a perspective to the church that I think is rich. I think that ordination doesn't have to be the only way in which people can deliver leadership within the context of the church. And I think the fact that there's been a longstanding tradition on that, Rod, I appreciate your disagreement with it, but I think I'd like you to look and see the areas where we are trying to expand the voice and the involvement of many, many more lay leaders in the church.
When you talk about, and certainly one would understand that when it comes to making some of the changes that someone like Rod suggests that you only have so much power in this situation, and that those changes would, in fact, have to come from the Pope. As a bishop, can you speak out? Can you, if you had an opinion that differed from the Pope's, could you speak out? And would that be within your rights to say, as the Bishop of Pittsburgh, I would like to see this change or that change, whatever it may be?
I think that You know, we I wear a ring, and every bishop wears a ring, and it's connected with the ring that the Pope wears. And so basically what this ring means, it's a commitment, a lifelong commitment to leadership in the church, and that all of us, 2,250 dioceses in the world, 350 or so bishops in the United States, we're not independent silos. You know, we work together with the Pope. And I think I can tell you that from the work that we do at the Conference of Bishops, we have some very spirited conversations that in a very deliberate and organized way can be delivered to the Pope, that he knows exactly some of the issues that we're facing with.
Concerns that you have or even maybe a disagreement?
I think we take a look to say some things. Holy Father, can you take a look at issues that are serious concerns for us? Like, for example, anybody who had a chance to be a part of an interview that we did with as many people in our diocese as possible about what family life is like in today, when we sent back the report to the Pope, it was an honest look at the divorce rate in the country, you know, the issue of people not coming to church, the issue of families that are split apart. And I think when we sent all of that items to the Pope, he was looking for that kind of response. And not only did we send it, we sent it as part of the we also published it so the people in our diocese who responded to the survey would know it. I don't I have to say honestly that one of the things that I pledge to the Pope is obviously respect and loyalty. But that means it has to be honest. And I wouldn't say – I would never be in a position to disagree with the Pope. You know, but I think that at the same time, it's important to be able to share with the Pope some of the pastoral needs that we really have. As a matter of fact, honestly, I think on the major issues, I do agree with where the church is. I do agree with where the Pope is. And you know, that's not simply a matter of saying, well, I'm going to voice the company line, although that's what the role of a bishop has to be. I think it's important. The Pope can't be everywhere, so he appoints bishops so that we, in fact, are representing what the teachings of the church are.
So that even if, for example, and I'm not saying that there's anything you disagree with, and you've made it quite clear that you agree with what the Pope's stance is.
Sure.
But if you did disagree, you would still have to largely keep that to yourself?
Well, no, I think there are avenues, like, for example, on the less major issues. Like, for example, I'll give you a perfect example. Most Catholics will be aware of the fact that we had a new missal for the celebration of Mass that came out a couple years ago. For 12 years, you know, we as the bishops in the United States would make a recommendation to the people who are putting that together in Rome to say, you need to be sensitive to where the people in the United States are. And if they made a proposal about something that should be there and we felt that it wouldn't work well for the people in the United States, we were very honest about that. Obviously, that's the kind of dialogue and collaboration that's important. Anytime that you would speak to anybody who's a part of my senior staff, you know, or any of our priests, one of the things I always say, if you got something to say, tell me. Say it to me directly. You know, all I ask for is that what you say, you're going to say with respect, and then we can always deal with those kinds of things. And I think that's the kind of collaboration that was really a part of the Acts of the Apostles. When we read that book in the Bible, you see that how the church came about wasn't always easy, but people worked through differences to come to an understanding of what the Spirit was trying to accomplish in the people who were in the early days of the church. And the same thing's true today.
412-246-2002. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. Our guest is Bishop David Zubik. Let's go to Paul on 376. Get all the people in transit on before they disappear. Paul, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yes, hello. Thank you so very much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to talk to the bishop a little bit about I was raised Roman Catholic, and I grew up in a Catholic home, attended Catholic school. And then throughout my years, I've gotten to know a lot of different people with different beliefs. And I guess my question would be that there seems to be a sort of missing the point in Roman Catholicism sometimes on the fact of reaching out to people that aren't as like-minded as them in their beliefs. And there seems to be like a lack of like cognitive dissonance between like organized religion on, we all believe in the same thing, so we're all right, we're all going to heaven, and But how do you reach out to those people that never heard of Jesus or weren't raised with that idea? How do you reach out to those type of people so they feel like they fit in the narrative of the Catholic Church?
Well, as a matter of fact, that's really the reason why I wrote my pastoral letter. The church evangelizing, it addresses precisely that. You know, if people have an opportunity to really come to know Jesus, they've got to know it from the heart of somebody who really believes in him. If I could give you an example, Mother Teresa. You know, what you speak about, like a struggling with coming to know God, you know, most people were shocked when Mother Teresa's autobiography came out several years ago, and she confessed in it that probably for two or three decades of her life, she had a hard time coming to terms with God's existence. I mean, she believed in him, but she had a hard time coming to really know him. And in the end, the most powerful story about where that conversion took place for her and another person was in a ditch in Calcutta, India. She was down in the ditch with a man who was dying. And, you know, he was smelly, foul language, you know, just really was a victim of the hard knocks of life and people who made sure that he continued to be in the ditch. And because of the way that she reached out to him, he said, "Now, isn't this something? You know, here I am dying in a ditch, and I'm being treated with love by God." And it was precisely that same experience in which Mother Teresa was able to find God as well, too. You know, it seems to me that that's the first step that has to be taken with somebody who's struggling with the existence of God. It's kind of coming to know him through somebody else who believes in him and who lives him. And I think, honestly, you know, and I hear from lots and lots of people, from, you know, Catholics to non-Christians to non-believers, who will say, you know what, this Pope is making me take a look at God in a whole different light. And I think that it's not only the Pope that does that. It's every single one of us has the power to do that. And I think that's critical. The story that I told the day that I was installed as the Bishop of Pittsburgh, when I was going back to Green Bay, Wisconsin, the day after the announcement was made that I was coming back to Pittsburgh, I sat next to a guy. And I prayed the rosary before we took off, and he said to me, "So, well, are you afraid to fly?" Because I was praying the rosary. I said, "No." I said, "I just do that to connect with God." And I said, "Well, then you must be a Catholic because you recognize the rosary." And he said to me, "No." He said, "As a matter of fact, I once was, but not anymore." He said, "I'm a Buddhist." And so for the rest of our flight, we talked about what happened. And he said, "The reason why I left the church is I didn't find anybody who was really living Jesus. I believe in Jesus, but I didn't see anybody taking him seriously." And I think it's to the point that every single one of us has to be true to our faith traditions, and not simply when we come together to worship, but how we live the experience of worship in our day-to-day lives.
We're talking with Pittsburgh Bishop David Zubik. We need to work in a break, and we will continue with the bishop until the top of the hour. Our other scheduled guest, Wade Davis, is unable to join us. We'll look at possibly rescheduling that conversation. In the meantime, 412-246-2002 if you'd like to join our conversation in the time we have left here on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're continuing our conversation with the Bishop of Pittsburgh, David Zubik. 412-246-2002 if you'd like to join the conversation. Let's go to Ken in New Brighton with a comment. Ken, you're on with Bishop Zubik. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Ken. It's always good to talk. I like to talk to everybody, but especially I like to connect with people from Beaver County because that's where I go. That's where I have my roots.
Oh, well, I was calling with a comment. I am personally not Catholic, but I've raised my two sons as Catholics and have investigated, you know, the church. And I just never had that calling when I went there, even though I've met many, many wonderful people in the Catholic Church, until just recently with this new Pope. You know, he's given a good calling, and I think it's something that really should, you know, be celebrated. I thought I'd just comment and give a call in.
Well, I'm glad you did, and I think once again it just proves the point. The most convincing teacher about coming to know God is how a person lives it, and Pope Francis is doing that so admirably well. So good luck in your decision. We'll be more than welcome you whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Ken, for the call. Let's go to Phil in Oakland, who's been holding for quite a while. Phil, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hello, Bishop Zubik.
Yes. Phil, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well, thanks.
I just had a question about how you feel about the Pope living in the, not the papal living space, but in with the community, in kind of foregoing the traditional living space and living with other people, and how you feel about that and how that applies to our diocese.
Well, I'm thrilled about the choice the Pope made to do that. You know, I think he's chosen a much simpler life. And one of the other things that he's also said is that, you know, as Pope, he needs to be connected with people. And so there are tons of stories about his living in the quarters where he's living, where he mixes with people who come there for Mass, and you know, or how kind he is to the Swiss guards who take care of him. And there's a story that I think is very true. When the Pope came out of the apartment early, like 5 o'clock in the morning, the two Swiss guards were standing at the door. You know, as a world leader, that he has to be protected. And he said, "What are you doing here?" They said, "Well, we're here because we have to protect you as the Pope." And he said, "But you're standing." He said, "Well, we got to do that." And the Pope says, wait a minute. So he went in and got two chairs for them, came back and said, "Well, you have to sit down." He said, "No, we can't sit down. We're going to get fired." He said, "Wait a minute." He said, "I'm the Pope. You know," he said, "you can't just be standing here." So, I mean, I think that he has an understanding of never taking for granted what people do for him. So I really admire his, you know, his choice of his living situation.
Phil, thank you very much for the phone call. We appreciate it. Bishop Zubik, we're down to just we're getting very short on time, just a couple of minutes left, and I just wanted to hit a couple of important points quickly if we could. We had the caller earlier who talked about the idea of allowing priests to marry and ordaining women as priests. And I bring this up again only because is it important to consider other options for priests in the context of the number of active priests? I believe you have 260 active priests for 212 parishes. Do you need to create, or certainly this would again come from the Pope, but does there need to be some consideration coming from a place like Pittsburgh, for example, that we need to maybe create more opportunities for people to become priests?
Well, we're doing that, and we're having a nice increase in the number of seminarians, but we also have to be very realistic that with us baby boomers coming on the horizon of retirement age, there are a lot more of the older priests that are going to be retiring. The issue is that we're trying to address that situation, both in terms of inviting young men to become priests, but then also how we're working with our parishes to make sure that people are being served the best way they can be.
And there was also a concern that we heard earlier when we were playing the comments of the sisters at the top of the show. One mentioned that Pope Francis feels he has dealt with child sexual abuse by priests effectively. Do you think Pope Francis has done all that's within his power to deal with this problem?
I think the Pope himself has said it's not that's not an over and done situation. I think the fact that last week he came out and apologized for any priest who's ever heard anybody, and that he's also established for the first time a commission, international commission, that's addressing a worldwide problem. And I think that might have been a misstatement on the part of the person who said that, because I think the Pope realizes that's a horrific problem that it continues to be addressed, and he's not putting his head in the sand, nor is he feeling that it's completely resolved.
So the sister might have misinterpreted that.
I think so, for sure, and I think the proof of that is seeing the statements the Pope has been making even to the present.
We're down to about 30 seconds. This is one of the holiest weeks of the year for the Catholic Church as we head into Easter. What are the thoughts and concerns that you have? Final thoughts.
Yeah, I think anybody who's serious about Jesus, just take a good, honest look at any crucifix. And when you take a look at it, think about those arms raised on that tree of life from Jesus were meant for you, every single one of you. And make sure you take a good look at that, because it'll help you realize just how much God loves you and how much God loves me. And I just hope for God's grace and peace for all of you. God bless.
The Bishop of Pittsburgh, David Zubik, has been our guest. Bishop Zubik, thank you so much for joining us today. Happy Easter to you.
Thank you very much, too. God bless, Paul.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. Catch the entire show online at WESA.FM or as a podcast in iTunes. Until tomorrow, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.